Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of May, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the Mother's Day edition of Soundbites.
You're going somewhere.
We're going somewhere. We're headling along. Tomorrow is Mother's Day. You still have time to get flowers or a card at least or something. And that would be probably a good idea, before you get in hot water. Better to get the card than to get in hot water.
Oh, heck
yeah. A lot easier to recover from.
Exactly. Here we go again.
Uh-oh.
Tens of millions of stolen credentials for Gmail, Hotmail, and Yahoo email accounts are being shared online by a young Russian hacker known as the Collector as part of a supposedly larger trove of 1.17 billion records. Now, everything I'm about to say, take it with a grain of salt. This may not be true, but can you afford to take that chance? According to Hold Security, they say they've looked at more than 272 million unique credentials so far, including about 43 million that it's never seen before. A majority of the accounts reportedly were stolen from users of Mail.ru, Russia's most popular email service, but credentials for other services apparently are also included. Hold discovered the breach when its researchers came across the hacker bragging in an online forum. Though the hacker initially asked Hold for 50 rubles for the initial 10 gigabyte stash, that's equivalent, by the way, to about 75 cents, he eventually turned it over to them in exchange for likes and votes for him on social media. Some 40 million of the credentials came from Yahoo, 33 million from Microsoft Hotmail, and roughly 24 million from Gmail, nearly 57 million from Mail.ru. Thousands of others came from employees of large U.S. companies in banking, manufacturing, and retail, and hundreds of thousands more reportedly from accounts of German and Chinese email providers. Google declined to comment on the incident, but said users should establish a recovery phone number for their Google accounts. Users should also establish two-factor authentication where possible. And every user of Gmail, Hotmail, or Yahoo Mail should change their passwords now. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is millions of email credentials revealed. Your choices are: I've already changed my password. I'll change it now. Too much of a pain to change. I don't even know my email password, and I don't use email. So far, we've only got 16 votes, but about half of them are I've already changed my password, followed sadly by too much of a pain to change. It really isn't that difficult to change your password, except, of course, for those of you who use exactly the same password and everywhere. Anyway, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, you'll see under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. And the second forum is the poll discussion. And so far, at least the first item on the poll discussion is 7 May 16, millions of email credentials revealed. And so far, four people have posted there. And then, of course, if you want to talk about this or dang near anything else, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's like there's so many breaches, so many losses that it almost isn't news. But
yeah, really,
it's so dangerous because people do use the same passwords for so many things.
Well, and that's the problem, of course, because with your email password, they can get at a certain amount of stuff that you have online.
Right.
Now, the problem is, what do you keep in there? Did you get an email from your bank that you never deleted? Did you get, you know, email mm-hmm. with somebody else's phone number that you never deleted? It's that a lot of people use their email as a repository of information.
That drives me nuts. Well, I see people literally with, yeah, I know I've been that way for a long time. That's nothing new.
Yeah.
But no, I see folders though sometimes. Folks will have folders within folders and folders. It's like, wait a minute, if you don't need it, get rid of it.
Yeah. But I might need it someday.
Yeah.
Might need it someday.
And then the bigger issue becomes the recovery email address. You know, they'll go to your Amazon account, and if you didn't use the same password, they'll say, I forgot my password. Email me. And then they've got your email, so now they can reset your Amazon password, your PayPal password, your bank passwords, and get into your accounts that have money behind them.
Yeah, no, those I'm constantly, anything that's really important, those right. passwords, I change every 3 months yeah. on clockwork. I've mm-hmm. got a reminder on my calendar that says go in and change the passwords, and I've got them written down. So the only way anybody's going to actually steal them, because I write them down literally, handwrite them, and they're on my desk.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the only way that somebody's going to get them.
Is because come to your house.
Yeah, they got to yeah. come into my house, break into my house, and no, that's not going to happen. But I've got it set up so, you know, it's a combination. So,
yeah.
You
know.
Well, the problem with doing that is that there could have been a leak 3 months ago, and the guys had 3 months with your password.
Right.
You should really change your password every day.
Well, yeah.
yeah.
Well, here's the big thing. First, never use the same password twice. Mm-mm. The people are saying it's a pain is because they've used the same password for everything, probably including their banking.
Since the day they logged
in. Honestly makes you not particularly bright.
Or worse, when you ask them, I don't have a password.
Right.
Yes,
but,
you do.
Well, yeah, but the point is, if you've used the same password everywhere, then all they have to do is get any one of them. They've got all of them.
Yep.
And making new passwords is not hard. It's not a difficult. I know we all like to pretend we're stupid and that we can't remember or make up new passwords. That's a lie. We all know it's a lie. And I'm really kind of tired of it. In fact, I just finished a post, which I'll put on a blog post, which I'll put on Ask Nick when I get home, about how to create passwords easily that are also very, very difficult to break.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to do. And the reality is if your password is long enough, you know, it turns out size actually does matter. The longer the password, the better. I haven't put it up yet.
Yeah.
You can go look for it all day. It's not there yet. I'll put it up later.
Ready.
Today at AskNick.com. Yeah. But the idea actually is that password should be 20 characters or more. Holy cow, 20 characters. Well, I talk about how easy it is to make a 20-character password that's also easy to remember. It turns out that we used to talk about how passwords had to be complex. You know, a password had to be, you know, 47J left elbow 32 mm-hmm. exclamation point. It turns out complex is less important than long.
Yeah.
Because computers don't speak any language anyway. So happy 34 monkey as is incomprehensible to a computer as J4372 exclamation point 7. Right. So having a password that's actually a phrase, a favorite poem, a favorite song, a favorite quote, a line from a TV show or a play. Make that your password. So your password, and then you want to add capitals and you want to add numbers and you want to add exclamation points just to make the searchable fields, the searchable area bigger. But so, for example, maybe your favorite poem is Trees by Joyce Kilmer. So your password could be, I think that I shall never see $43.
Right. Don't use the entire phrase because the bad guys use phrase books.
Right.
So mix your phrases.
Right. But if you were to say, I think that I shall never see $43 sign.
Yep.
And let's say 43 was your house number. Easy to remember now.
Yeah.
Easy to remember. And again, even if you write it down, you could say, you know, my Facebook password is Kilmer House.
Yep.
Kilmer House money. Oh, I think that I shall never see $43. And that's
knowing the state of my account, I never will. No.
Yeah, right. So the point there is you can make up passwords that are easy to remember long enough to make it difficult at the very least for people to get at your stuff and still have a password that is good in every way. So I don't have patience for people who say they can't remember passwords. There are also programs like KeePass and LastPass and the key chains that the computers use that will help you remember those passwords. So you don't have to remember them all. You just have to know to get into the password vault.
Right, and many of them will generate really good long passwords you have no hope of remembering, but then they're stored under your master password. So please do not forget your master password. Make that a nice, good password to remember.
Right.
That way, you know, no one can ever get your passwords. Someone actually asked about that on one of the podcasts I listened to about, you know, being tortured for your password to your bank or your son. I don't know my password. My computer remembers it for me.
I have no idea what it is. All right. Well, and so few of us would get tortured for our passwords. Yeah. All right. To the phones.
Your wife.
Password now.
And you just hand it over back slowly away. Our first caller is Don from Webster, New York. Hiya, Don. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Number one, I can't get you on Windows 10. I went through and put on your website, and it just won't work.
You need to install a media player for the MP3 stream.
A media player? I think that's already on there.
Which one did you install?
I don't know.
Then you probably didn't install one.
I probably didn't.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
One of the things is that there are several links on the Jazz 90.1 website for different qualities, and one of them is an M3 stream, and one of them is an M3U playlist. So if you go to that Listen Live button, there's two or three places to listen. There's a big Listen Live, but then there's also a click here to listen live and a low bandwidth Listen Live. Actually, he's got some information on how to use VLC to listen to the stream on Windows 10.
VLC is Windows 10 does not come with a good media streaming.
Shouldn't the browser do an MP3 file built in?
Don't start.
Yes,
do not
it should.
Start. Yes. But what you can do is, as you know, Windows 10 has its own store. Apple has a store and Google has a store. They have their own store. In that store, if you search for VLC, you can install VLC right from the store.
I did that VLC from the store.
Okay, and so when you click on the Listen Live link, what happens?
Nothing.
No.
It should download that file, and then you have to tell VLC.
Yeah, it does download that.
Right, and then you have to tell VLC to open that file.
So you double click on that file. You click on that file.
Okay.
And theoretically, VLC will open it up.
Or you right-click on it and say Open With and choose VLC.
Right.
Okay, I'll have to try that.
And we'll put those instructions, link to that page on our website.
Oh, okay, that'd be great. One more thing. I called you, I think, 2 weeks ago and asked you if the Kodak printer was compatible with Windows 10.
Yeah?
It is.
Oh, good.
Good.
I woke up the other morning and had Windows 10 on my computer.
Yeah.
And the first thing I tried was my Kodak printer, because I didn't want to go out and have to buy a new printer.
Yeah, of course.
And so I just thought I'd let you know that.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In case somebody else calls.
Yep.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have fun.
Yep.
That's the other thing. There seems to be a certain amount of confusion about Windows 10.
It's America's
longest
running computer
show. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Back to more sound bites with Nick.
Too many things firing over there.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, not a problem. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Unrich.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we go back to the phones, Microsoft, we have some confusion going on here. At one point, Microsoft said Windows 10 would be free forever. Microsoft is now saying Windows 10 will stop being free on July 29th.
Well, my take on that was it will stop being available for free. So it was free until you can't get it at all. Now you have to go to the store and buy it because that's a different program.
I don't know. I don't know. But that's all I know is that they used to say it would be free forever, but they are recently saying it stops being free on after July 29th.
Which is the one-year anniversary when they released it and said it would be free for... They initially said it would be free for a year, so now they're going back to their first statement.
Right, right. So don't call me and argue with me, because I'm only telling you the last thing Microsoft said was it stops being free on July 29th. And so there you are. You can decide that's wrong, but Microsoft is the one who said it. So
until they change what they say.
Until they say change what they say again. But that right now, the latest information is it stops being free on the 29th. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vince from Rochester, New York. Hi, Vince. What's up?
Hi. Quick question. Actually, I'm not too computer savvy, but I just need some guidance here. When I go on my AOL account to check my emails, I have gone to on the left side of my screen it says options, and I scroll down after options to mail services. I click on mail services, and it'll show you your AOL account and all the rest of it. And then further down, it says recent activities. So when I went to click on recent activities, what it does, it shows apparently who's accessing your email AOL account.
Right.
And basically, it'll identify the time. It will tell you the location, and then it'll ask you, is this you? And then if you go further to the left and you ask for details, it'll give you an IP number. Now, I know my IP number, and I don't have a problem with, you know, identifying mine. But recently I found that when I go on and do that, at the same time that I go on and identify myself as my IP, an unknown location comes up. At the same time, with a different IP number. Now, I checked with Time Warner. I've checked with AOL. I've actually installed the malwarebytes.com. And I'm still having this kind of repetitive, when I go on, this other access number comes on, the IP number comes on. So I'm somewhat confused as to what is happening. Well, someone told me from Time Warner that there might be a keylogger. I don't know what a keylogger is, but it became kind of a concern of mine, and I'm basically, you know, asking the question if you could help me out in that regard.
Did you write down that IP address? Can you give it to us?
The IP address that I have?
Yeah.
No, the other one that you don't recognize.
Okay, hold on. Let me get this. I did write it down. Actually, there's a couple of them. And when it shows unknown, it'll come up and it'll show an IP address. But let's see, there's a couple of different ones. Let's see. Oh, gosh.
And this is in your house. You're not at a company or business?
Yeah, no, this is in the house.
Okay, because sometimes businesses would go through a proxy server that may have a different IP.
Yeah. I know what my IP is. I'm just wondering if I'm getting, you know, someone else coming on my...
Well, it is certainly possible, and the thing I would do is immediately change my email password.
Right, and I've done that. I actually went to AOL, and we went offline, and we changed the password, and we came back on, and it was still there. And of course, this was before I installed the malware bytes.
All right, so one thing that it might be is you actually have multiple IP addresses.
I do. I only know of one. But
what is the one you know about? Does it start with 192?
Hold on one second. That much I can tell you.
And so you'll have an IP address for your computer inside your network. You'll have
The IP number that I have is a 2 starts with a 274. I think it's not that number.
Trying to stop the dead air.
All right, while you're looking all of these numbers up, let me tell you exactly what happens here.
Yes.
You have multiple numbers. One is the number inside your network if you have more than one machine on, say, a router or wireless.
Okay.
That number probably starts with 192.168. It might start with 10 dot something. That is your internal number on your own personal internal network.
I see.
You also have an IP address out to the world. That's the router that came from your ISP, Time Warner, I believe, in your case.
Right.
They would know if that was one of theirs. If it's yet another one, then that's coming from some other place. And knowing what that address is, there are tools you can look up. It's called IP lookup. You can use the IP lookup tool online or, maybe not on Windows, to look up where that IP address is in the world. The problem is without knowing that address, you can't look it up. But once you do know it, Steve can post the link to that webpage that will tell you where that IP address is located.
So what do? You go to...
Well, you see it when you go there. It'll have a box where you put in the IP address, click the lookup IP address button, and it will tell you where that IP address is.
I see.
And then once you've done that, you'll have at least a better idea. You know, if it's coming from, it may say it's an AOL internal address. It may say it's coming from somewhere in China. You know, you'll have some better ideas to what's going on.
Right. I know that I I've had, like I said before, a couple of different IP addresses that have come up I've kind of jotted down, but where in God's name are they now?
And next time, please have that stuff handy before you call, because we can't help you without those numbers. But
I know.
When
I
you
didn't.
Find them, you can look that up on the location that Steve's going to put online, and you'll be able to at least figure out where those things are.
Right. I think one start.
We can't help you without the full address.
Okay.
Knowing the starting number.
I can give you a call back and let you know what the
full address
is.
Well, or you can do it yourself. Either way, Vince.
Pardon?
Either way, you can do it yourself with the address we just gave you, or, of course, you can call us back and we'll type those letters in for you.
Okay. And so, again, what was the address? It's
Soundbites.org. Soundbites.org. It's right there at the top of the list right now. If you go to soundbites.org, you will see the very top thing right now is IP address lookup. Click on that, and you'll be able to read the article about it, and in there will be a link to it.
I see. So it's possible that it could be one of my internal IP numbers that I'm seeing. It doesn't come up all the time. It's just every
like
once
I said,
in a while.
If it starts with 192.168 or 10 dot something, it's an internal number. If it's in
24,
a Time Warner address, it probably starts with 24. But if it's it's a Time Warner address, the IP address lookup program will tell you that. So you'll be able to figure out at least where it is.
Okay. I had it all written down on a piece of paper, and believe it or not, I lost it.
No, I bet you did. That's fine. When you find it, you can use that program to look those things up. We have to move on.
Okay, thanks an awful lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vince. And Vince has done actually a very good thing. He has gone and looked at his account to see what's going on with it. All kudos to Vince for that. He's done exactly what you should do with your email account regularly.
Google and Apple do that too. They will email you if you connect from an unusual IP address.
Right.
It's like you're normally, especially if it's out of the country, you normally connect in the U.S. and someone tried to connect from China. Well, is that really you? And so it could be that. Sometimes it's just the way the internet works. You never know how your traffic gets from you to the other end.
Yeah, it's just not a straight shot.
And well, sometimes so it may take a couple of different paths before it gets to the other end.
It's never consistent either.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you're going right to the, well, you think I'm going right to that site. No, you could wind up going out to California, coming back down to South America, back up. Who knows? It's all over the world. It's the World Wide Web, folks.
Right, right. But generally, what something like AOL is keeping track of is the ending address,
right?
The connection address. So Finn should be able to find out using this program at least what's going on. All right, back to the phones.
Hey, Matt and Sonica.
Hello. Our next caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York. Matt, what's up?
All right, hey Nick, I got a question. You know, my cell phone has only got 8 gigabytes of memory or RAM or whatever. Is there any way something I could do to clear out the bloatware from Google? Google puts on all this stuff, and I get pissed off about it. You know, I mean, they put a lot of stuff on the phone.
Right. First, it's not Google; it's the carrier. So it's either Verizon or Sprint or one of those people. Google puts some stuff on. They put Gmail and stuff like that on. But you find a lot of stuff. Verizon puts on an amazing amount of junk. And there's nothing you can do to remove those. Those are part of the phone itself. Depending on what phone you have, you can add a memory chip to it.
Oh, like an SD card, a little SD chip put in the back of it.
Right. And then you can do two things. First, the first thing to do is get the biggest one your phone will take and then go into your camera app and tell it save to the card.
All right. So basically I got to go out. I got to buy a chip and.
Matt, stop. Yeah. The first thing you have to do. First thing you have to do is look at your phone's documentation, whether it's online or wherever, and see how big a card your phone can take.
It says up to 128 gigabytes.
There you go. That's the first thing you have to do. There's no point in buying a card that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So do that first. Then you can buy a card.
And to everybody else looking at buying cell phones, do not buy an 8 gig model. In fact, don't even buy the 16 gig model because they're cheaper, yes, but you always run out of space.
I download so much stuff and I got so many games and stuff on there. It's wow, it takes up
If you only use it to make phone calls, then 8 gig is okay.
Yeah,
Corporations will do that for corporate phones because you're supposed to only make phone calls on your corporate phone.
Also consider one, though, that you can put a micro SD card in.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking
about. Storage.
So that you can then immediately put all your pictures on that. That saves up room for a lot of people who take a lot of pictures. The other thing that you can do is you can move some of your apps to the SD card. Now, that only saves some room, generally about 50%. But it does save 50%.
Yeah. So that's good.
So that'll help. From then on, really with 8 gig of RAM, you're just limited to how much stuff you can put in it anyway. Sorry. The problem is some apps must reside in main memory. All apps must have some of themselves in main memory. So eventually, no matter how big your phone is, if you put a lot of apps on, you will at some point run out of space.
Yep. Now, sometimes you can go into your settings app and some apps you can uninstall.
I think he's talking to somebody else somewhere.
Yeah. Matt, either, you know, listen. Matt, either listen to us or, you know, we're going to have to cut this.
Don't put your phone on speaker.
Yeah.
Because we're hearing.
No, I'm right here.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, hey, Shannon, say hi.
Hi.
I got a girl over here today, too.
Congratulations. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you. Yeah, so some apps, I posted a link, some apps can be deleted.
Where is it?
But as Nick said, many of those apps from the carriers can't be deleted because that's what they want to put on the phone for the contract you probably signed.
Right.
But yes, it's a problem with all the phones. We used to, us in the Apple world, we used to yell at Apple for making 8 gig phones. They still do make an 8 gig 5C. Save up a little more money, get at least the 16 gig model, if not the 32, because you're going to want the space. You always run out of space. There's so many cool apps. Oh, that's neat, download. Oh, that's neat, download. And suddenly, so I have 3 devices. They're 16 gigs each. So between them, I use my iPad for games. I use my iPhone for calls. I use my iPod for music. So it's that's the other way to do it, too. Just
right.
as you accumulate devices over the years.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Come back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Just wanted to pass along a little trick when putting memory cards, like SD cards, in your phone. Sometimes phones will say they'll only take up to, like, 32 gig. And a lot of times if you put a larger card in there, like, say, a 64-gig card in a 32-gig phone,
right.
It'll come up and it'll say, it can't read the card, it must be damaged, do you want to format it? And when you format it, boom, you get all the memory of it.
Nice.
Somehow it does it. It's done it on 2 phones of mine where they were 32 gig maximum, and I put 64s in them and formatted them, and they recognized it right away.
It may be the file format. It may have come in right. FAT32, and now it switched to NTFS, and it can read the full thing.
Right.
Yeah, good trip.
Good tip.
Get more memory, you know, into your phone.
Yep. Thanks, Mark. Nice. That's a good tip.
No problem.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yep.
There are also wireless hard drives you can get. We sell a lot of those to parents for road trips so they can fill it with movies. So you can get a 1 terabyte wireless hard drive, fill it all with movies, and each of the kids can be watching a different movie from this one right. wireless hard drive.
Right. There's a lot of ways that you can increase the amount of memory you have, but Steve is right. Having a low memory phone to begin with still means that at some point fairly quickly, you're going to run out of room.
In fact, Apple just started offering 256 gig options on their high-end iPhones and iPads.
Yep.
And so that, you know, that's in computer range now.
Well, right. It's also very expensive.
Yeah.
There's your $1,000 iPhone.
Yeah.
And the price is in computer range now too.
Yeah. But it is, you know, it's the pocket computer.
Yeah, right. And we're seeing that more and more. People are using their phone as their main computing device.
Yep.
You know, well, certainly their main communication device in all sorts of communication, but people play games with them. They store information in them. They do everything with their phones nowadays. So it makes sense at that point to spend as much money as you can to have as much memory as you can, to do as much stuff as you can with the phone. That makes a great deal of sense. It's a hard thing to do to spend, you know, that additional bump. You look at, you know, the 8 gig phone costs X and the 16 gig phone costs Y, and is it really worth the difference, or the 32 gig or the 64 gig or whatever it happens to be? Yeah, it's worth it. Trust me. It's worth it.
One of the things Apple has done, which is a little annoying to us, is their base phones are 16 gigs, but then the next jump is 64.
Right.
So, and that's usually $100 more. So you're quadrupling the RAM for $100, the storage for $100. That's probably worth it. So why don't you just make the minimum 32? Because that would cost more.
Right.
Yeah. But at least the minimum is 16. And for most people, jumping at least to that 64 is going to be very welcome, especially if you do a lot of photos. More and more people are using their cell phone as their only camera, because cell phone cameras are so darn good now. It's amazing.
Right.
And so you take lots of pictures, lots of apps, messaging. You're messaging pictures back and forth. All those messages take up space. In fact, that's one of the settings you can do on the iPhone, probably on Android phones too, is how old of a message you want it to keep.
Right.
And the default is keep your messages forever. So all your text messages and picture messages. And that just eats up your space. We had a guy brought his phone in the other day, and he had 0 bytes free, and the phone wouldn't do anything. And it was 30 gigs of messages, basically.
Yep.
And so change that setting. So you auto purge your messages after 30 days at least.
Yeah. Verizon, you can back them up to the cloud. You can sit there and your messages, your text,
right,
your contacts, and everything else. So yeah, you can then purge them off there, especially photos.
But you
got to
be careful,
yeah,
that you aren't linking the two, because then if you purge them off your phone, you also purge them off the cloud.
Yep.
So you got to be very careful before when you set that up.
That's the other great thing, though. You know, not to plug Verizon, but they do offer classes for folks, and I advise folks, especially if they get a new phone or that. Whether it's Mac or the iPhones or the Android phones, they have a lot of great free classes that I would advise folks, because folks are so overwhelmed now, because literally you do everything, emails and texting and everything else, searching the web on your phone.
Yep.
You know, go and take the classes.
I have a friend who said, my phone, the battery only lasts about 8 hours in a day. You can get a full day out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at her phone and said, well, you're looking for new Twitter messages every 30 seconds. You're looking for new Facebook posts every 30 seconds.
Wow.
You're looking for new Snapchats every 30 seconds. And I went through about 15 social apps.
Get out.
That all were looking every 30 seconds. I said, you have two choices. You can be a little less narcissistic. Not how I put it.
Yeah. Tactful.
Or you can run out of battery every 8 hours. And we decided that what she would do is buy one of those external battery pack things so she could recharge the phone.
Third option.
Rather than, God forbid, have to wait an extra 30 seconds to pick up a new tweet.
Why not switch it to like every minute?
No. She'll be 30 seconds behind everybody else.
How many thousands of tweets go by in a minute?
Yes. Yes.
Do I look like I care? You know, that's... Yes. Right. I'm sorry. Again, maybe
you're
it's my...
the choir here.
You know, I know. But maybe I'm, I'm old. And
you
I'm
are.
Sorry.
You're
tweeting,
dirt.
Instagram, and all this other stuff. You know what? I lived 67 years so far without it.
Yep.
And you know what? It's still a phone. If it's really that important, have them call me. It's just like some
nobody
folks,
uses their phone. You are old. Nobody
oh, I
uses
know,
their phone
but that's what
for
slays
calling
me.
Anymore.
I mean, certain individuals, they'll sit there and, I got to answer them right back because they text them.
Yeah.
Why? You're out doing something. Well, that'd be rude if I don't answer them right back.
Well, that was the point of a text. You can get back to it later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hello, don't let it control your life.
Leave me a message. I'll get back to you when I can.
Yeah. Well, or, they'll hear my... Because I've got mine, and they go, woohoo, text message.
Yep.
They'll say, don't you have to get that? No, not unless I really want to. I'm not going to let a phone rule my life unless it's something important I know is coming in.
Right. If it's, I always look, because if it's my daughter, I'll answer it immediately.
Oh, that's if it's a phone call. You don't call
Well, even if it's a text. No, my daughter doesn't call. She texts. So I always look because it could be my daughter. So if it is my daughter, then I answer it right away. Other than that, they can wait for as long as it is until I feel that I can now do something with it. The whole point of a phone originally, and now with the smartphones, with texting and everything else, the whole point is to time shift.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right? I don't have to talk to you right now. I don't have to text you right now.
Yeah.
But people like this lady that I know, they cannot have their phone... They cannot have a 30-second piece of information out there. You know, it can't be 30 seconds is too long to wait for information.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I found the numbers. 7,000 tweets per second.
Yeah.
And
she's getting most of them, by the way.
And if I scroll down, 700 Instagram photos per second, 1,000 Tumblr posts per second, 2,000 Skype calls per second, 34,000 gigabytes, 34 terabytes of internet traffic in 1 second.
Every second.
Every single second. And I'm still way up at the top of this list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can jump to Google. 54,000 Google searches in a second. 120,000 YouTube videos viewed every second. 2.5 million emails sent every second. 99% of which are spam.
Exactly. most of which people ignore nowadays.
This is a pretty cool website.
All right, back to the phone. This is a cool. Put that up there, will you?
Yeah.
Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
Well, two things. Number one is I appreciate that the Rochester Googles has put up the location of their meeting. Now, if I could just remember to check it before the meeting, I could go.
This is why you have. This is why you have a calendar, an online calendar. You put it in there and have it remind you the day before, an hour before, or 2 hours before, and then you're ready to go.
I'm more like Dave. I've got a calendar on the wall.
Write it on the calendar on the wall. Yep.
I know. I'm just kind of stuck between old and new technology.
Yep,
anyway,
no,
my real call is about my Gmail, and I've never heard anybody talk about this before, and it's probably a feature. But what I notice is if I have emails, several emails, email reply, you know, with an individual, or even on a subject, Google thinks I want to have them all together, so they put them all in one spot. Unlike when I used to use, when I use Outlook, they all show up individually.
Right.
Now, that's good if you want to have them all together, but it makes it more awkward when you want to, let's say, take email number 3 and forward it, but maybe you don't want the person that was in email number 4 to see it. So you're never, I get a little nervous about sending the emails. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where somebody's included one of the emails, but you don't want to. So here's my question. Is there any way to set it in Gmail to unbundle so they all stay separate?
Yep. It's called Conversation View. We used to call it threading back in the olden days.
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually in Gmail right now, so where would I find the thing to change it?
You click the little gear icon and go to Settings.
Okay. Gear,
and I'll
settings,
post this.
Okay.
General. And Conversation View.
The General tab, then scroll down to Conversation View. You can turn it on or off.
Okay, I got Conversation View on. So if I turn to Conversation View off.
And then go back to your inbox.
Then go
save
directly to the
inbox. Hold on. Down at the bottom, it'll say Save Changes. Do that first. Sorry.
I only do about that about half the time anyway. So,
go back in, Settings, General,
right,
Conversation
save changes,
Mode,
yep.
Save Changes. There
save
you go.
Changes.
Now go
so
back
now
to
I'll
your
go back,
inbox.
They'll all be separated.
Yep.
Wonderful. I'll tell you, this is worth the price of my membership there.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks.
And I might even start thinking about working with that calendar. You know, right about the time I start backing up my files, I'm going to do that.
Pat. Here's your homework, Pat.
Here's what I figure. If anything goes wrong, it's my fault, and I'll live with it.
Pat,
and,
here's what
and
you do
said,
today.
I've been in my 60s doing Pat? This way, and it might not be the best way, but it works.
Pat?
I like Pat.
Pat, when you hang up the phone.
God bless you guys, and I'll be
he's not
going
to listen. He does not want to listen. When you hang up the phone, back up.
Yep.
He is.
He did. He hung up already.
Yeah.
Well, for all those of you who haven't hung up yet, back up today.
But he's still listening.
He's still listening.
He's a member.
Back up today. It's important. It's important. If you care about your information. Pat's right. If you don't care about your information.
Don't worry about
it. Then so what? But if you care even a little bit about what you do. You want to back up. You want to make sure you have multiple copies of your backup. You want to check those backups every once in a while by restoring something, one thing, so that you know it worked.
Yeah. I've been, right now, this past week, I've been backing up, taking a lot of my Word documents and moving them over to Google Docs. lot of the older stuff that, you know, I've been slowly going through and sorting out a lot of stuff. You know, I just...
Yep.
It's amazing the space that I've recovered.
How much cruft you've got.
Yeah, it's like, wow.
Well, now you've got it set up so that it automatically translates them to Google format, so they're not taking up any space.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I've been doing all that. And even the spreadsheet. I got this other spreadsheet that's important to me. And as a matter of fact, today, because I just finally finished that up in regular Excel, and I converted that right on up to Google spreadsheet.
Google format. Slides, their PowerPoint product, has a new feature that just came out this week. You can set up a, just by clicking a button, it sets up a URL that shows up at the top of every slide.
Mm-hmm.
And your audience can go there and post questions.
Mm.
So if you say, I'm going to take questions at the end,
mm-hmm.
right? They can go and say, they can see the list of questions that have already been asked.
Mm-hmm.
And they can add their own, and they can also vote up or down somebody else's question.
Huh.
So you can then go and say, all right, the most popular question was X, let me answer that. The next most popular was Y, let me answer that. And what's nice about that is you often get people who come up to you after. This happens to me all the time. The thing is over, I want to go home, and I get people who are saying, I didn't ask this question in public because it's a stupid question. So if you got, 20 minutes to answer it now, okay. But now they'll be able to ask it at least semi-anonymously. So that's a very nice thing. And they've added a laser pointer as well. So that's nice too. All right. That music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But you're not done. You get to do it again. We'll be, after a slightly longer break, we'll be back again with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's me, Nick Francesco. And in fact, it's you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Well, that explains it. I hit the volume all the way down. 4 minutes after the hour. You're listening
funny
to
how
sound
that works. I can only control so much here.
Yep. At some point, I'm on my own. I do get that. I do indeed get that.
Which you're usually pretty good about.
Thank you. And yes, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. All right, folks, for those of you still on Windows 7 earlier this year, Microsoft warned users that Windows 7 has serious problems. We all dismissed its claims as a desperate attempt to shift copies of Windows 10, but now Microsoft has warned of a new serious Windows 7 problem that is very real, even though it makes no sense whatsoever. In short, Microsoft has made a seemingly small, yet completely bizarre tweak to Windows Update on Windows 7, and confirmed it is crippling many users' PCs. The tweak? It switched the status of Windows 7 Update KB3133977 from optional to recommended. The bizarre part? Despite acknowledging problems, Microsoft knew they would occur in advance, and it has no plans to do anything about it. Asus is one of the largest PC component makers and supplies motherboards to many of the world's biggest PC makers. Recently, it enabled secure boot and UEFI on all motherboards. This wasn't a problem for older PCs because Windows 7 didn't support secure boot. That is until KB3133977 came along in March and enabled it. Initially, the fallout was small, but last month, as we said, Microsoft made that knowledge base item a recommended update. The result was every user running Windows 7 and the default Windows update settings would find the update now installed automatically, and then everyone with an Asus motherboard was hit. Affected machines simply show a red box which tells you there's a problem and you should boot from some other device. All of which does nothing to pinpoint the problem or solve it for those without a second secure boot device. In short, you're screwed. The good news is Asus has issued a workaround to get PCs booting up again. Asus must take some of the blame for not reacting faster when that knowledge base presented a potential landmine and issuing new updates to its motherboard. How do you know if you have an Asus motherboard? Well, go to All Programs, Accessories, System Tools, select System Information. This will list your PC's components, including the motherboard. However, some major PC makers like Dell and HP rebrand the motherboard, even though it is made by Asus. They rebrand it as their own, in which case you would need to do a web search on your model and call the manufacturer directly. As for the bad news, well, that's Microsoft's reaction. Their recommended solution is to upgrade to Windows 10. There will be no fix forthcoming. So, you still happy with Microsoft? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0400.
That's why the Chromebook sounds so much better.
That's exactly right.
Asus's solution is to disable Secure Boot.
Yeah.
Which has its own other problems.
Yeah.
Right.
But if folks have desktops, what they can do, turn the thing off. You can take the side panel off. With a flashlight, you can usually look at the motherboard.
Yep.
And it's usually pretty clear. It'll tell you the motherboard brand and the version number, because you also need that. Because you can't assume just one particular type of Asus motherboard. You also need the version number. And you can do a Google search on that and then see if there's any updates for that.
Right. But in fact, both Asus and Microsoft say there is no update. There never will be. No, I'm not done yet. Oh. There is no update. There will never be an update.
Your host.
And they're all saying, you know what? You're using Windows 7. Forget it.
And
of course, that's because Windows 7 stopped being supported in January 2015. All those of you who are telling people that Windows is supported until 2020, please stop.
Yeah.
It is supported till 2020 if you are paying for that support. If you are paying Microsoft to support Windows 7 because you're a corporation and your corporation is paying the tens of thousands of dollars Microsoft demands for continuing to support Windows 7, then yes, you are still supported. If you are an individual in your home and you have Windows 7, you are unsupported. You will still get a few security updates, but that is it.
I just turned another person to a Chromebook.
There you go.
A young man brought his machine in. It was a laptop. And somebody else had it apart, and, you know, it's in pretty rough shape.
Yep.
So I says, you know, it's just not worth putting the money into it. I says, you know, cut your loss. I says, all right, so what do you do with it?
Yep.
And he says, tell you what, be right back down. So I went upstairs, got my Chromebook. I says, here you go. This is what you need. He goes, what do you mean? I says, you surf the web, you want to do, you know, play your games online and all that, you can do it. I started showing him all the. He goes, yeah, but how much is something like this? Because his parents were with him. I go, $270 plus tax.
Which is probably less than it would have cost to fix his computer.
They go, what? The parents are going, seriously? I go, yeah. The father was sitting there going, gee, I think I might get one too.
Yep.
He goes, that'll do everything. And I don't have to worry about Windows. I go, no. No viruses, no spyware, no malware, nothing.
Yep.
He goes, why aren't more folks getting it? It's slowly catching on. It's slowly catching on.
Chrome Microsoft has more marketing money.
Right.
Which is odd because Google has more money than anyone.
Has more money than anybody.
Yeah, but folks still think they got to have these other programs or this or that. You know?
Well, and you ask people, what programs do you use? Well, I use Facebook. No. That's in the browser. What programs do you use? Oh, yeah, I do my email. Okay, that's in the browser. What programs do you use?
Oh, I use Microsoft. Microsoft program?
Well, one of the things is I like to edit pictures. That's no problem. You can download one of the things from the store.
Pixlr editor.
You pull it in from a flash drive and then save it up to Google Photos.
Yep.
You go, really?
Yep.
I go, yeah, I've got thousands of photos up there in Google Photos. And I says, and I can look at them on my phone. I says, a tablet on here. So I showed them a few, and they go, oh, wow.
I have a friend who edits photos all the time for ads.
Mm-hmm.
He helps people set up ads on the internet, blah, 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 do this stuff. He does it all out of a Chromebook because you can edit all the photos, all the pictures, all the whatever you want using online things. He does audio editing. He does video editing all from the Chromebook.
Yeah.
There's very little you actually need a computer for anymore. Yep. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Batavia, New York. Hi, Ron. What's up?
Hi. I have a Apple. Wi-Fi unit and
an air
airport.
Airport Extreme. I'm sorry. I sort of lose my train of thought here. I made a purchase of a. I wanted to extend my range, so when I'm out in the yard, I could I could listen to streaming, and I can just get so far. So I bought a range extender. And first of all, let me ask you: is Netgear an acceptable one to use with this with my AirPort?
Generally, no. You want to use the same brand extender that you have of your main router. You can often fiddle different brands to work together, but it's easiest if you use the same brand.
Okay. They have a new unit out. Apple has a new unit out.
Yes.
For a couple $100, is that the one I should be looking at?
Generally, yeah. So is your AirPort router, is it the flat one or the tall one?
The flat one.
Flat one, yeah. So it's probably N, maybe even G. So technologies have gotten faster and better, and most of the latest routers are using a new technology called AC, and so the Apple's tall router is AC. One of the biggest features of AC is longer range. So if you get a new AC router, you may not have to have an extender anymore because it's already got longer range built in.
Okay. Are these extenders difficult to set up usually?
If you're using the same brand of main base station to extender, then you run the usually they come with a wizard to set that up. Apple calls theirs the AirPort Utility. Most of the other brands use a website inside the router to do that range extender setup.
Would I be able to set this up with my iPad, or do I have to have my iMac on? Because they're going to want a password and all that.
Generally, yeah, you can set it up with your iPad. You can download the AirPort Utility for iPad from the from the Apple App Store. Or use the web server built into the new router, following the instructions that come with that. It's usually one of the problems is most of the routers come set to 192.168.1.1. So every router is the same. So when you have two router, you're setting up your second router. It's got the same address as the first router, which makes it a little tricky. Which is why it's often easier to use the same brand router for your main and your extension.
Will I have to unplug the one I have first, or
not if you're doing an extension? No. In fact, if you're replacing the Apple router with a new Apple router, there's even a feature built in where it will read all your settings and all your passwords and copy it to the new router.
Oh, I see. So just unplug the old one and plug the new one in.
Right, you can do that too.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right, thanks.
Generally, the problem becomes the AC routers are a little more expensive than the N router. So, you know, don't necessarily buy on price alone. Look at your feature set. If you have larger houses, or you know, now we're getting into nice weather, you want to get out, you know, to the patio, into the back porch range. The new AC with its faster wireless anyway, and also longer range. It's oftentimes it feels like you bought faster internet service because now your Wi-Fi is faster. There's a technology they call beamforming. Typical wireless is just a giant sphere of radio, you know, like a typical, because it is a typical radio transmitter. With the new AC technology, the two devices can actually form a tight beam between the two. So that's one of the ways they get much longer range. So we've had a lot of customers that have come in to buy a range extender, and we find out your current router is probably 4, 5, 6 years old because it's one of those things you never replace. Right. Put in this one new AC router, and it reaches the whole house, reaches corners you never knew you could get to before. We've got one customer that's got a shed, you know, like half a mile away. They can get their wireless signal down to there. The kids were excited because they thought mom bought new went up to, you know, turbo speed Roadrunner.
Right.
Nope, I just got a new router.
I may have to get a new router. My my wife is once again pointedly pointed out that she cannot get her Pandora in the very back corners of their property.
But at least she's given up on that front Faraday cage.
Yeah, she has given up on the Faraday cage. Yeah. She's given up on putting anything in there. So that's good. But now she's pointedly mentioning that twice now this week. So I'm taking the hint. I have to go buy a new router.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm still lucky. Where mine's situated, I mean, I can still be out on the front porch out there with it and get it there, or upstairs on the, you know, technically the third floor because the router's down in the basement.
Right. Oh, I got plenty of range. It's just if she's working way in the back corner, she loses the signal. I keep telling her, don't go in the back corner. That's easy.
That works.
Yeah. She gets it everywhere else. Now, somehow that's not really happening. Maybe I'll just get a range extender. It's only for that one direction, that one spot. Every place else works fine. So we'll see. But yeah, that's
string of wire.
String of wire.
Yeah.
Remember the olden days when network gaming was huge, and so you'd string wires to your friends. We had calls. People were doing that. They were stringing wires between their friends' houses and across across lawns so they could play networking games before the internet got big.
Yeah.
We used to haul all our computers down to one guy's house and run wires everywhere trying to. It was so funny because three of us were computer guys, and the other guy, you know, these two kids were just gamers, and they whooped our butts every single.
Sure, of course.
So it was the five of us against those two, and we still lost.
Yeah,
but it took forever to run these wires and set things up and get your IP addresses set and
LAN parties, man. I remember LAN parties.
I can remember when I first started up the business, and I was doing it out of my condo, and because to set stuff up. I had something in the living room, then in the study, and then over in the dining area.
Yep. Yep.
And I was running wires and everything else. Finally, Lori comes up to me one time. She goes, wait a minute, time out here. I go, what? I'm busy. She goes, seriously, this has got to stop. We got to find you a shop area. So that's how we found up starting the business and opening up the shop way back when.
It was just for you to play in, and then down in someone else brought a broken computer in to fix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brighton Henry at Town Line Road. It seems like decades. Well, it was decades ago.
Yep.
Now you're on your third career too, right?
Yeah, we're
so on. You've retired from three careers. I'm still in my first career. Well, I'm in my second career, so I got a ways to go yet.
Yeah, you got a ways to go. I retired from my third career and started about five more.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It's member-supported jazz, 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Don from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Don. What can we do for you?
Hello?
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hey,
I love the show, but I just wanted to correct you guys on the Windows support life.
Here we go. Go ahead.
It's after January 2015, they stopped making service packs and updates, but till 2020, they'll still release security patches and reliability patches when necessary.
Yes, that's what we said. That is the only thing you will get. You will not get service packs. You will not get standard updates. You will only receive security updates.
Right.
And I think only critical security updates.
Quite clearly before, so.
Right, and only critical updates. If you go to Microsoft's site, it will tell you that extended support is something you pay for.
Exactly.
Although I haven't found a price.
Higher corporate businesses who don't want to go to 8 or 10. God forbid they go to 8.
Right.
One page I did find from a blog entry, it wasn't even Microsoft, was $600 per computer. And
probably about right.
It was a blog entry from someone in Britain, and apparently the UK government just spent £5 billion paying Microsoft to support their old computers. So that's a good use of taxpayer money. So what's it, £5 billion? That's about $8 billion, right?
That's about right. Yeah. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
I've got a couple questions for Steve. First one is, you guys were talking about cell phone storage, or these questions are both for cell phone storage. iPhone 4S, is that capable of accepting an SD card? Because I don't see any way of getting into my 4S.
No iPhone is.
No iPhone can take a storage?
Not internally, no. You can plug in an external USB flash drive to copy files into it. Or you can use a wireless flash drive or wireless hard drive to copy files back and forth.
But only to copy files back and forth. You can't access them from the – you can't run them from the drive?
Movies and videos you can view from the external drive, yes. So and typically it's your photos and video that are the biggest file storage units. So you move all that stuff to the external drive and leave the internal drive for your apps.
Okay, so no iPhones. Well, I got the 4S, and I was thinking maybe of going to a 5S. So my next question is the 5S. What's the storage possibilities on a 5S? Do I get choices if I go to Verizon, and what would my choices for storage be?
The 5S, I think, had 16, 32, and 64. They don't sell the 5S new anymore, so now that's the older phones that some carriers still sell. The iPhone SE is their typically free with contract phone. That's their less expensive phone. And that's, trying to bring it up real quick here, is 16, 32, 64.
Okay, because I really want to stay, I'm out of contract, and I kind of want to stay out of contract some way. Because then for two phones, I'm only paying like about $75 a month for Verizon.
Most of the carriers have stopped doing contracts and have in essence started doing leases. So you still pay a monthly fee, but it's not a legal contract, it's a payment plan. So you're still paying every month, it's they just changed the way the legalese works on it.
I see. Okay,
The iPhone SE is 16 gigs or 64 gigs, so that only comes in two sizes.
And which one was that again?
That's the iPhone SE, that's the 4-inch screen. And then in the 4.7 and 5.5 inch, the regular 6 and the 6 Plus comes 64 and 128 as well.
Okay, what size is the screen for the 5S?
The 5S was a 4-inch screen.
Okay, sometimes they have these, Verizon has them as they're called recertified or refurbished or something, and it's even... That's kind of what I was thinking, the way to go on something like that to get the 5S.
Well, check, because you can get the iPhone SE for $16 a month at the 64 gig capacity.
Oh, okay.
So that's something that you may not want to get a 5, what is it, the 5S is 4 years old now. So you're getting a much older technology phone. That's one of the reasons Apple came out with the new iPhone SE. It's the 6S guts inside the 4-inch phone.
Okay, yeah, I gotta have that small screen that I have on the 4S because I'm on call 24/7.
Yep.
I got a waist thing, pouch that the 4S fits into nicely, so I got to keep that size screen.
Yep, that should work for you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
The other thing we've seen the carrier start doing is separating the phone payment from the plan payment. So that $16 a month is just for the phone. And then you got to buy the plan, which is 50, 60, 70 bucks a month, depending on how many minutes, minutes, text, and data are the three big things on your plan. For the last several years, unlimited texting has been included in plans, and you paid by the minute. Now, a lot of plans we're seeing is unlimited minutes because, as we mentioned earlier, nobody uses their phone to make phone calls anymore.
Yeah, right. So they'll give you all the minutes you want.
All the, you know, free minutes, but you pay by the gig now.
Right.
And so you'll end up, you know, so you start off at 1 gig and see if that's enough or not. And if you have a family plan, you know, sharing 10 gigs is probably enough. But then you see how much you use, and you may have to move up in your plan.
Well, and then you know, you go to someplace like Netflix and say, you can stream movies 24/7. No, I really can't.
Yeah, because then you run out of your monthly data plan in the first 2 or 3 days.
First 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. Hiya, Ken. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. This is what's on my mind. I have two things. Number one, when you were talking about the potential problems that might Windows 7 might inherit, I was in the process of planting Gerber daisies outside. So my question is this. Are you going to post anything on your website, be it the KB number or any more information about it?
Oh, about the Asus
yes.
thing?
Yep.
Yes.
That's already there.
It's already there.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. It's the top thing right at the moment.
Okay.
Well, the YouTube
I'll look at it later on.
Yeah.
My next item on my agenda, and I'm operating under the principle that three heads are better than one. I could go to Google. I know that. And I may have done this in the past, but I value your opinion. I've heard Dave Enright talk about it in the past. I know he's a diehard Chromebook guy, and I can see all the advantages of that. But he has said in past shows he plans to keep his Windows 7 machine so he can do certain things that he might not be able to do with a Chromebook.
Correct.
And I can buy into that, too. So here's my concern.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot with photos. I can put them on flash drives. I can put them on the cloud. I can do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my problem. I print a lot of pictures, too. And in the past, I've had a Canon IP4000, which after years and years, it shit the bed. And now I'm using an IP7220, which I absolutely love. So my fear is there any type of printing machine that I can use effectively with the Chromebook, or should I do just what Mr. Enright's going to do, hold on to my Windows 7 and print from it?
Well, you should be able to print to any printer.
Yeah.
Is this printer networked or is it wired in or what
USB?
Is it?
USB?
It's wired in. I don't even use it wireless.
Does it have
but
wireless?
It could be.
It could be, yes. It has wireless capability, but I don't use it.
Yeah, virtually all wireless printers in the last 2 or 3 years can print directly from Google Cloud Print or from Apple's AirPrint. If it's a USB-only printer, then it does have to plug into a computer that's connected to the internet, so you can then print from Google Cloud on other devices.
Right.
So if I had a flash drive that had photos on it, and I had this printer hooked up wirelessly to the Chromebook, would that work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I've done that. I've done that more than once. You print them. In fact, I could print them from here. And then just pick them up when I go home.
Yeah.
So what I can't do is I can't use it wired like I am now.
Right. It is unlikely that there is a driver for
the Chromebook to work with
the USB connection to that printer. But you can do it wirelessly. And in fact, when you print from Google Cloud, you can print from anywhere you have a network connection. So
right.
Like I said, I have a bunch of photos on my system right now. I only have a black and white printer at home, but it doesn't matter what the printer is.
Yeah.
If I can connect to it with the internet, there's a driver for it, and that means I can print, you know, to the capabilities of that thing.
Well, I know, Nick, you've said this in the past, and, you know, you can ask 10 people and get 10 different replies. I know you said, why would you buy a Chromebook if you're not going to utilize the cloud, and I don't plan to utilize it. I, we're creatures of habit, and
yeah.
I've saved tons of files on flash drives. And that's what I want to print off of. I don't want to mess with the cloud.
Yep. No, and that's fair. And I get that. You need to be aware, of course, that flash drives die.
I know. I had one just die the other day. And then when it died, all the icons looked like they were red in China.
Yep. And now those files are gone forever unless you have backups.
Correct.
So one thing you could use the cloud for, depending on how you want to do this, is for backup.
True.
So that's just a thought. But still in all, I'm a guy who embraced the cloud. I keep everything on the cloud. I want to print something. I do it that way. I want to send it. I do it that way.
And I hardly ever print anything anymore.
Yeah,
I keep mailing at my wife
for
printing crap.
And that's it. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, if what you do is what you want to do, then certainly a Chromebook would do everything you've talked about so far today.
So hook up my printer wirelessly to the Chromebook, and I'm good to go.
Wirelessly, well, now take a look at your printer.
Right.
And see if it actually has Google Print built in, Google Cloud Print.
Oh, that needs that?
Well, if it does, everything just became a lot easier.
Okay. All right.
So if it has that, then you just hook up with that, follow the instructions, they'll be in there.
Okay.
Hook up to Cloud Print. And now when you go to print something from a Chromebook, or indeed when you go to print it from a Chrome browser or from dang near anything, one of your choices will be that printer out there at the cloud, and you're on your way. So,
but if the software on this printer doesn't have that feature, am I up the creek? Can't use it?
You can probably still use it, but it might not be as straightforward.
Yeah, smooth.
Yeah, you may need a little more work.
All right, so I don't want to take any more of your time, but how would I pursue that?
Well, Steve's got a page here on how to connect your printers to Google Cloud Print.
Oh, you're a sweetheart.
He's gonna post that on our website.
All right, that's very, very nice.
So give him a couple minutes and it'll be there.
You guys are the best.
Thanks.
Take
Have
care,
fun.
Ken.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, even I still got, like you said, the Windows 7 machine that I'm doing. Right. But that's becoming less and less, I got to admit. Other than the one thing I'll admit that I haven't gone over to yet is my Quicken. I've still got that on there. But I've been doing everything else. Like I said, just this past week, I've gotten a lot of the document files and everything else, up to Google Backup. Under Google Docs, the spreadsheets, and all this. I literally have years of information on there and on my server that I'm going through and I'm sorting it. It's taking some time. So I've got my priorities. I'm working on it. But I can honestly see myself just doing the Chromebook, and Windows 7 will eventually shut down for me. Yep. I'm finding more and more that I don't need it.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I do like that I might go to is just a bigger screen, which I can, hook the Chromebook up.
Well, I was about to say, I have a friend who loves his Chromebook, but he wanted something bigger for home. And I said, you can just get a giant screen and hook your Chromebook to it. But what he did was he went out and bought a Chrome Base.
Oh, okay.
Which is a Chromebook in a little box, and then you add and it sits on your desk just like a desktop like a desktop would.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hook a keyboard and a mouse and a screen to it, and
you're
good to go.
Then
and it has a wire jack too, so he can hook a wire into it. So now he's got this little box on his desk, which is actually a big Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a Chrome Box.
I'll have to
or a Chrome Base. Now I have to go look.
It used to be a box, didn't it?
Yeah, it did used to be a box. It might be a Chrome Base now. Or maybe that's just the name of the one he bought. But it's got a 32-inch screen because that's what he happened to buy, and et cetera, et cetera. So, there's a lot of capabilities and possibilities and stuff like that for that there. All right, listen, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yeah, here's the Chrome Box. So if you've already got, we were just talking about Chromeboxes and Chromebooks and Chrome bases. If you've already got a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor, you can get an Asus Chromebox starting at $180.
But the Chrome base for like $226, you get a nice big monitor and
you get the monitor and everything. So it depends on what you have or don't have or, you know, whatever it is you want. They're pretty neat. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rob from Brighton, New York. What can we do for you, Rob?
Hey, Nick, I'm that bald guy that spoke with you about tinnitus yesterday morning.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I have an issue with Microsoft.
Yeah, you're
and here's
the one.
My issue. Windows 7. I have a legit copy. It pops up. It says upgrade to Windows 10, and I goofed up and I couldn't stop it. So eventually, it went through, and it says you want to reverse it, and then I do, and now I'm getting this pop up window on my Windows 7 that says that you may be a victim of software counterfeiting.
Oh,
so I'm guilty till proven innocent.
Right.
Oh, is there anything I can do other than just upgrade to Windows 10 and see if that works? Or
have you tried re-entering your product key?
No, I have not. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask probably the question that everybody asks: how do I get my product key?
When you bought the computer,
yeah, right.
Yeah, when you bought the computer, it was on a piece of paper. It may also be on a sticker on the computer somewhere.
All right.
It should. Doesn't it come up when you look at if you right click on my computer?
No, that's the product ID.
Oh, right.
There are programs you can get, Product Key Finder, that will look at your product ID and try to pull your product key back. But if it thinks his product key is illegal. What that means is your product key has probably been installed on a second computer. It thinks your actual computer is a second computer because you had a different OS on it. You changed too much and now it thinks it's a different OS.
Right.
You used to be able to call Microsoft and say, no, I just put a new hard drive in, I just reinstalled my OS. I doubt they're going to do that anymore with Windows 7.
Right.
All right, yeah. So I have a sticker on my computer. It says Windows Vista. So I don't know if this was an upgrade of 7 from Vista or not. You know, I bought the system.
It must have been. So somewhere you've got the Windows 7 product key and your Windows 7 installation disk.
Yeah, the problem is particularly when you buy from a third party or when you buy from a private person. You have no idea what that system was like, and you often don't get all the information you need to move on. For the longest time, Microsoft didn't care if you had a legitimate copy, and then they did. And a lot of people have been caught by this over time. Certainly moving up to Windows 10 will solve the issue, at least until they want to start charging you for it. And I guess once they start charging you for it, they won't care either. As long as you pay, they win. In terms of Windows 7, you'd have to actually have that product key available from somewhere. And like Steve said, there are programs that will try to find your product key in your machine because it's somewhere in the registry. And what may well have happened is that bit of the registry got mildly corrupted somehow, which is worrying, but happens.
Maybe that one of those programs I think was called Magical Jelly Bean or something.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, Magic Jelly Bean Product Key Finder.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Are there any others?
That's the one I usually use.
That's the one we usually use. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting is a lot of times your antivirus program will flag that as a hacking tool. Well, yes, it is. I'm trying to hack my own computer.
Right.
So I've had Norton and McAfee automatically delete hacking tools as soon as I decompress them.
Right.
And it's a pain to because I need, as we mentioned sometimes, you know, people don't remember their password, so I have to look in the registry to find the password they saved. Well, that's a hacking tool. Yes, it is.
Yes,
let
it
me
is.
Run it, darn it.
So that would make me a hacker. All right. I'm a hacker now.
Congratulations, Rob. Welcome to the club.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very, very much for your help.
No, thank you. Have fun.
Take care.
I remember reinstalling a customer's computer. Their hard drive died, so we put a new hard drive in. Windows wouldn't activate, so I had to call Microsoft and tell, we put a new hard drive in, and you read a 50-digit code, and they give you back a 50-digit code. Okay. Now we didn't install Microsoft Office. Same thing. Oh, God. And then we installed Adobe Acrobat. And same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just buy a new computer. buy new licenses to everything.
This is why I love Linux.
Yeah.
Because everything is free, nobody cares, and it's why I love my Chromebook. Everything is either free or I bought it online, and they remember that, and I don't have to worry about a thing anymore. Like I said, I do still have a Windows machine, and I believe that's going to be given over to my wife at some point shortly.
Oh, I found a tech note. If he happened to buy his Windows 7 license online, he may have an email with the product key in it.
Oh, that's possible too.
Yeah. To go back to Dave's earlier rant, people saving their email forever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's something you should have printed off and stored in a safe place.
Yep.
Or taped. Oh, how about into the inside or on the side of the box?
We've run into a lot of laptops that had the sticker on the bottom that have worn off.
Yep.
And now you can't read the digits anymore.
Right. That's why the first thing you do is you copy that stuff.
Well, that's where they started. Yep. After a while, they noticed that, and they started to put it in where the battery.
Right.
You know, you take the battery out in the battery tray.
There was one that had a little slide out tray, and it had the Intel sticker on it, you know, the HP sticker on it, the Windows mm-hmm. sticker, the FCC. All the stickers were on this little tray. So they made the computer cleaner.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
At Apple, a lot of people have asked Apple why they don't put the Intel sticker on the Apple, because Intel pays the company to put their sticker on it.
Right.
And so our joke is, because that's a warning.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. But yeah, Apples have never had those stickers. In fact, the newest computers don't even have the name of the computer on it anymore.
Right.
Which really bugs us. People, you know, people joke with us. You know, the caller earlier about the airport, is it the flat one or the tall one?
Right.
That helps. You know, what color is your computer? Well, they've been silver for about 10 years now, so it's about time to change colors.
Right. So if somebody said they've got the white one,
we know it's really old.
Right. And thank you for the link to the. I never thank you for the link to the battery. Thank you.
Yeah.
I haven't bought one yet, but it's there. It's only $90. I should get one. I have my daughter's old original white 13-inch MacBook.
Okay.
And it's ancient now. I mean, it's big and it's ancient. But the battery is completely shot. I mean, you can only run it on power.
Oh, okay.
Not even to run across the room and plug it into another
outlet. No.
It won't last that long.
You unplug it, it's done.
Yeah.
And I've actually turned it into a Chromebook by putting Neverwhere on it.
Okay.
So it's now a Chromebook. It still has no battery, so I just might spend the $90 for a battery. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to find parts for older computers, and customers get mad at us. You know, they don't make your part anymore.
Well, that's like
your computer.
That's like I told you, that laptop.
Yeah,
because they were saying the fan, because they were getting the warning that the fan was, you know, not, and it was overheating.
Right.
Well, they let it run too long, but it wasn't just a fan. It's one of those laptops that has the fan and the whole cooling unit.
Oh, yeah.
It's a ducted fan.
Yeah, and to try to, you know, replace that, I told them, I was right up front. I says, you know, I'm only going to be able to get something used. And then if I go ahead and, you know, buy that, put it in, and because he ran the computer even while it was saying that warning, you know, put it in. What other damage was done to the motherboard? I said, so that's why I talked them into going to a Chromebook and saved them probably quite a bit of money, because to take a motherboard out of a laptop is a pain in the butt.
Yep.
Right. Folks don't realize the number of, you know, little screws that are in that. I have a sheet. I have to put down a sheet of paper and write down where they came from, because there are tons of little screws in there. And they all have to come out and to get at that fan, because it's all screwed underneath. It's nothing. Just like when I used to repair the power jacks. Well, it's right there. Yeah, but to get it there, I got to get it at the bottom of the motherboard.
Yep.
So the whole thing's got to come out. Oh. And you tell them a price, and, well, that's not worth that. Well, then, you
Apple's
know.
Got one model where the power jack plugs into the top of the motherboard. And, oh, that was so nice. But in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, it's always been on the bottom of
yeah,
the
right. motherboard. Right.
Yeah.
So now you turn your 5-minute repair into a 2-hour repair.
Well, still to just get it out and unsolder it, you know, that's still a pain in the butt.
At least ours are socketed, so that's easy to
repair. I still like the magnet. That's something that should have caught on. That magnet, you know. Connector.
Well, the problem was Apple patented it,
right? And then they stopped using it on the new 12-inch MacBook. Has a non-magnetic connector.
Right.
So there's a third-party company that makes a magnetic adapter for it.
Right. All right, that music tells me we have reached the end of another episode. I want to thank everyone who called in. I apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Next week, please call earlier if you want to get on the air. I want to thank...
For his recent award he was given?
Mike. Mike's a big deal. Mike's also leaving at some point. This just saddens me. That's right. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just 166 hours. It's 55 minutes after the hour now. Stay tuned. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.